Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Provincial State of Mind with myself, Owen Harrison, Jeff Neville and Tom Savage. This is a podcast focused on all four Irish provincial sides in both the URC and European competitions. We discuss what happened the previous weekend, what we can expect from each province in their upcoming games, as well as any major off-field news. So Jeff, how's your weekend been?
Week has been fine, yeah. Haven't really done anything at all, really, worth mentioning. My Spotify Wrapped came up there the last day, and three of my top five most played songs are from Moana, so that's Parenthood in a nutshell. But otherwise, not a dicky bird, really, to be honest. Just a very, very average week.
My Spotify was pretty credible, actually.
Was it?
Right. It was pretty credible. I'll just drag you to the top. There's nothing more interesting than somebody's Spotify Wrapped. I truly believe that. Everybody else's are boring, except mine. My top five, Radiohead, number one. Pretty cool. Coldplay there, number three. Not very cool, but somewhat current. Then you have the Cranberries and Oasis. But then number two, Lewis Capaldi. I remember listening to Lewis Capaldi.
I'm not a big fan of Lewis Capaldi, but it's the same way. Like, I'm not a big fan of musicals that are just like Cats. Like, I remember going to see Cats, and afterwards I was like, while I didn't enjoy it, I can appreciate how good it is. And I feel that way about Lewis Capaldi. Like, I wouldn't be a fan of his music, but I appreciate how good a voice he has.
I don't know how he's there at number two. I don't know how it happened.
That's your at-home share. Like, you share like the Alexa thing or something.
I think what happened was, for a while there, I kind of got really into, you know, Somebody Crying. You Loved, that song, right? I kept listening to it over and over again because it's like, this is really moving. And then because I heard he said, oh, it's written about his grandmother. So I'm like, I was listening to it and I was just like, really? That's your granny you're singing about? I don't know. So maybe that's how it happened.
The documentary on him is brilliant.
It was.
It's very, very good, yeah.
Tough to listen, tough to watch actually for a bit.
Yeah, yeah. But very, very good.
Well, my Spotify list.
He would be a Glasgow Warriors fan, so that was particularly tough to watch as well, if he was a rugby fan.
My Spotify list has also been influenced by my daughter. So
Fight
I
Club.
Have...
Fight Club.
Fight Club. No, we have...
There's like death metal on there and stuff.
No,
there's... I had the tiger.
The top artists are Armin van Helden and Fatboy Slim, so going back to early 90s dance music. And then the next two are One Republic and Taylor Swift. So a bit of a change up.
I'm surprised
she's not higher up on mine.
I'm surprised she wasn't on mine, to be honest. Genuinely surprised she wasn't in my top five. And like for me, not like somebody else. Yeah.
We're at least two to three of this podcast are Swifties.
She's the voice of a generation.
Songbirds.
Don't know what else to say.
Look, all I know is she's dating Travis Kelce.
What's funnier is I only know him as an American football player. Don't know his name, don't know his team, whatever. But I know all the lyrics to Taylor Swift's first album.
I only know of Travis Kelce because he's dating Taylor Swift.
Yeah, literally the only reason that man came into my news at all was because of Taylor Swift.
I'm literally the opposite of that. I know who she is more so because she's dating him.
We have two Swifties and an
American football fan.
I can't say that word.
An antithesis of a Swiftie.
Yeah.
An anti-Swiftie. A reverse.
A reverse Swiftie.
I'm the anti-hero in this trio, isn't it? Oh, nice. Thank you.
Yes.
Secret Swifty.
Right. Let's get on then with the rugby. We'll start off with Leinster and Munster.
Before we jump into the game, I have a little game to play if you're interested.
Of course.
So what we have is, I'm going to pass it off as my own homework, but it's not my own homework. But we're looking at the overall top team season total so far. Now, I'm only going to pick the ones for the provinces, to be fair, to keep it current, right? So what we're looking at is the top teams so far this season in terms of, let's say, it might be carries or kicks in play or something like that, okay? So let's see, can we guess? Well, I know who they are because I'm looking at the answers. But Let's see, can you guess who they are? And afterwards, I might have a guess, and then I'll be right for all of them, and I look really good. So top team season total so far, carries. Which province has made the most carries?
I would say Munster. If I was to pick a name out of the hat, it would be Munster.
That is literally the name of the game, yeah. That's what we're doing here.
I'm going to go Ulster.
It's neither. It's Connacht.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Next one. Tackles.
I know that's not Munster because I was doing homework myself earlier and I know it's not Munster. Most tackles. Who kicks the ball the most out of the group? That's the thing. I think because I think the two were linked. Is it Leinster?
I'll go Connacht.
It's Ulster.
Oh.
We're really bad at this game, Tom.
Visits to 22.
That's Leinster.
Leinster.
That is Leinster. Yeah, that is Leinster. A couple of funny ones that came out there. Kicks in play. I thought that would have been Connacht. It's actually Cardiff. Meters made. Any guesses? It's not a province.
Meters made in ball in hand, isn't it?
Would be, yeah.
Benetton?
No, good guess though.
I'd go someone random like Zebra.
Sharks.
Bottom of the table.
Yeah. That is weird.
I would have thought they had anti-meters at this stage. Negative meters. Right, top players after round six. I'm back to just the provinces. Carries.
Gavin Coombs.
Oh,
and I'm not editing this podcast, so you really need to fill those spaces.
I'll go. Oh, actually, Connor Oliver.
Gavin Coombs. That's
he's right. He's really high up in the tackles as well.
And the last one we have is, turnovers one.
Oh, provinces?
Yeah, I'll take province. If you can get the player, I'll give you a big metaphorical pat in the back as well.
Turnovers one. Christ, I have no idea. I think it's probably a Connacht player, isn't it?
Owen?
I'll go Conor Oliver again.
It's David McCann. Ulster win that one. Yeah.
At least one of those is bullshit, but yeah.
And last one then, we'll go with top players from the last round alone. Okay, so just the last weekend of games. So we have lineouts one.
Thomas Ahern.
Owen?
Yeah, we've got Tom Ahern on that as well.
It was indeed Tom Ahern. Yeah. So we won't go through the other teams, etc., because this is a provincial podcast, but I thought it'd be a nice little game. Certainly turnovers one was an eye-opener for me, to be honest. And I thought that if any team was going to have meters kicked or number of kicks, etc., it would be Connacht. But no. But Connacht actually play most off first receiver. They go wider than first receiver more than any other team. Which
I saw that today.
Cool.
And Leinster, I think, are there as well.
It Leinster second, yeah.
What they're doing at the moment. But yeah, it's an interesting one.
But it also explains why Connacht's centres are just running amok so far this season, really. Like, it's because they're getting the opportunity, I suppose. But I just thought we might start with a little game. So that's me. That's the end of everything I have to say, really.
You should put a little game show intro to that.
I am not editing this at all. I'm in a rush because I want to watch the Bake Off final. I missed it last night, so I want to watch it tonight. So there'll be no editing.
It was brilliant. Dave won it.
Dave.
He baked a fucking chocolate cake or something.
A sponge chocolate cake.
Oh, nice.
Clearly, neither of you watch it because a sponge chocolate cake is not enough to win the Bake Off. Don't be stupid.
He did use some of the stuff out of the shop. But he did it really well, to be fair to him.
Yeah, you don't understand the competition.
He put no feelings face on it, iced it onto it. It looked fabulous.
It was a showstopper.
Yeah, it was excellent.
That was Joe Naughton, anyway, who had all those statistics up. And I just screenshot them and used them as my own homework. to play that game. So thanks very much, Joe, for letting me do that. And I will, of course, edit that part out and pretend it was my own.
Beep out the bit where you said his name.
Hmm?
Just beep out the bit where you said his name.
Yeah. That was beep, Jeff Neville, beep.
We have an intro pro.
We do. We'll kick on with that. Leinster 21, Munster 16.
How do you feel about it?
I'll jump in if you want.
I'll let you jump in. I had very different feelings that were... It was much like riding a wave, I think. I was somewhat confident for Munster before the teams were announced. I looked at the teams and went, what the fuck was that? Particularly with the Munster one, I was like, what's happening there? And then first sort of 15, 20 minutes was like, again, completely gone in a different direction. And then, happy enough overall. But yeah, go to you, Jeff, on that.
I was chatting to, after team sheets came out, I was chatting to a fella on Saturday, Kevin Coleman, and he was off to the game, etc. He's a big Leinster fan. But he's still all right, if you get me. He's still okay. But he's going to the game and he said, How do you think it's gonna go? Like, blah blah blah, do you think Munster are gonna win? And I said, losing bonus point, I'll be happy with that. And then we'll see you on the 26th in December. And that's exactly how it panned out. But to say like after the game, because he texted me after the game and he was like, yep, just as you said. And I was like, yeah, but I'm no longer happy with it. There was a win there that we didn't take. So while I was happy with the losing bonus point, because it's kind of, I think it's what a lot of us would have expected or kind of planned for, given how the game panned out, there's a frustration there because, like, I mean, Leinster won the game. Like, well done. 100% they won the game and you can only play what's in front of you. I just think, like, you look at the Gibson Park try off Burns pass, you look at Larmer's try, like those two, I know they happened, but like, if that's the frustrating part. It's stupid mistakes. Like, and if they don't happen, who knows? So yeah, a losing bonus point beforehand, after seeing team sheets, you'd say, yeah, I'll take that. But after the fact, and I suppose that's what changing your mind is, isn't it? It's been presented new evidence and changing your mind as a result of it. But after the game, I was like, yep, no, losing bonus point, you can't be angry, but I am. But I am frustrated. That's how I felt about it anyway.
My big takeaway out of it was that it was just a loss, because I think we've been over games before, not necessarily on this podcast, but I know I certainly have in years gone by, where kind of, you know, rooting through a drop birthday cake, trying to pick out something you can use after a loss to Leinster and the Aviva. And you're trying to go, oh, well, look, maybe we can look at this and going forward and this, that, and the other. That's not the case anymore. I think that the gap between the two teams now is very, very small. And Munster just lost. And there was no grander, oh, well, look, they're closer, they're getting closer. I don't think that applies anymore. I think Munster, as you said there, Jeff, we'll be looking back at this game and going, we should have won it. We had the chances to win it, even with the, I would say, three tries that were gifted to Leinster, because that penalty that Simon Zeebo gave away, you might say it was a bit harsh, but he needs to roll away, he needs to get back up to the defensive line, can't give the referee a chance to give that. And our maul defense was poor as well. You look at those three chances, we were more than good enough when we had opportunities to win it, even all the way through to a pass, a little bit more composure, a little bit more discipline. And we're much, much closer, and we maybe even nicked that game. And that's encouraging in one way. But at the same time, I think we've earned the right to just be disappointed that we had a win there away from home, the Aviva, and left it on the table. And that's the frustrating thing. But big picture, Munster, I think, will be happy enough once they get over the missed opportunities. They'll be happy enough to look at the opportunities, and the losing bonus points, like at the end of the season, could be really important. I think at the start of the year, they'd go, okay, that's a game Leinster are likely to load up for. Let's really look at that as a losing bonus point is the worst case scenario. And I think that they'll be happy enough that they got that. But very good game and lots to like from a Munster perspective, even in the loss.
It was a brilliant game.
I think for me, I agree with you. Munster will be happier with that. I think they've rotated the team, got what I think is a potentially an extra point that they may not have thought they would get out of that, and they can strengthen it further down the line, potentially in the match against Leinster in Thomond over Christmas, where Leinster are likely to have to rest a lot more of their frontliners now than they did in the Aviva. For me, the big moment there, it's almost a sliding door moment, was the Gibson Park try. That offload from Byrne. Munster had someone in the bin. It was maybe taking a risk that he shouldn't have, but I understand why he did. Zeebo's coming around that. If Zeebo gets that ball,
it's a try.
Yeah, it's a try, because you have Ahern and Hodnett sitting out in the 15-meter channel, and you only have Keenan coming across. It's essentially a 3-on-1, and it's a try. And that then takes it to, what is 17-nil at that point?
Yeah, that'll be 17-nil.
And that puts a completely different perspective on it. After that, and sorry, including that, most of what Leinster were able to do relied on them getting down into the red zone by the basis of Munster mistakes or penalties.
Penalties.
Yeah, and kick into it. And like we saw back in the URC semi-final, I think we talked about it last week, Munster gave away, some, I think was it five or six penalties, and two or three of those were given away in the first few minutes. So for 70-odd minutes, they gave away two penalties. And once you stop giving Leinster easy access into your red zone, they struggle. And that's the thing again.
And this is the thing, like, as in, from a Leinster perspective, watching the game back, I ended up watching it again today because I was doing a breakdown run. I found Leinster's phase play in between the 22s not what you'd expect from Leinster. Like, wasn't very complex. There wasn't anything special or remarkable about it. Most of what they did best happened if they got a penalty. And they were looking for penalties. A lot of what they do with the breakdown is trying to pin guys in. There was one moment in particular stood out to me. It was in the second half, I think. Jemison Gibson Park had a ball to play middle of the field. Stephen Archer is on it. No, I think it was in the second half, actually. Stephen Archer is on his side, not interfering with play. We can see on the camera that the ball is available. And you can play it, right? It's like, there was quick ball there to be played. But Gibson Park was waiting for a penalty to be given. And I'm like, play it. Like, you can play that ball. Like, you have numbers. But it just seems that a lot of what Leinster are doing at the moment is looking for those penalties, because what they're best at, I think, as a team at the moment, is that line-out, maul, sequence. They can score directly from the maul, but their action directly afterwards, if they peel off it, that's where they're at their best. When they're playing phase play, it seems that that's kind of where they're worst at the moment. And a lot of the talk about Kieran Frawley in the aftermath of this game, to me, was a bit confusing, because the best stuff he did in this game, I felt, was the Sexton loop. He was able to run that.
Did people say Frawley wasn't really played poorly? Did people say he played poorly?
Kieran Frawley?
Yeah.
Oh, they said he played really well.
Oh, sorry.
And I was like, he was okay. Like, he wasn't poor by any means. But I didn't see a guy who should be getting into the Six Nations off the back of that performance by any means. And this is what people have been saying.
No. I had someone say in my mentions that if he gets a bit more time, he'll be challenging Crowley for the 10 spot for the Six Nations. Now, I'm not knocking Frawley's ability at all. I actually thought he was brilliant at the weekend, but I think suddenly we're seeing that same thing we saw about Prendergast, and we saw about
Ross Byrne, and then Harry Byrne.
Harry Byrne, Frawley again. Lot. Yeah, like, let's just slow it down, let him play, see how it goes. I thought he was very, very good.
What I like about him is that he's got the athleticism to run a lot of the plays Leinster like, which is that Sexton loop. He ran it off Henshaw a few times and he was in the exact right place. Thought Munster defended it quite well. But I just feel overall, like, his strategizing over a course of two or three phases, like, for me, wasn't Elise, I don't think Munster were overly concerned in during phase play, which you imagine with Leinster, that's like ridiculous, right? But I didn't think Munster were overly stretched during phase play at all. A lot of the penalties we gave away were just daft.
A big like moment for me was the Gavin Coombs penalty.
The thing is, I know what he was trying to do. He was on his feet, technically. But you're asking for trouble.
You have to be clean cut there. You have to be as clear as day when you're
like,
for that.
In the exact same body position, if he was looking to win a Jackal penalty, the exact same way, he would have won it. But when you're going for a slap at the hand like that,
can't do that.
It's too risky.
Because Josh van der Vleer was in the same position earlier in the game in a defensive ruck. I think it was in Munster's.
It was in the first half. 22. It was on Casey on a kick.
And he was literally looking at the ref, same position. He was like, will I? And the ref was like, no. And he goes, okay, I'll be a good boy. And he was a good boy. But yeah, you have to be just so clean on those. You can't just go for it.
And it's like you said there, Owen, if you don't give Leinster penalty access, they are such an easier team to play. It's like, it's night and day, but when Leinster get into your 22 with a line-out position, big trouble. Always. Massive trouble. That's where they're, I think they're the best in Europe at converting in your 22 because they're just so good coming around the corner. They're so strong. They've got such powerful, tight runners and they've got so many plays they can get out of. But if you can prevent them from getting into that position or you know, giving up a stupid defensive mistake, you could hem them in.
Another good idea is just don't let them score points.
Ideally, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Well, they sort of help you with that because they don't take the kicks for posts. They turn them down. That's their out and out policy is put it into the corner.
And, you know, 7 points is better than three.
It is. We went over this. Converted. Yeah.
You missed. It's only... I knew you'd regret missing my seminar. What happens is.
But it is. I think it's important, though, to look at that from a Leinster perspective and go, their phase play work at the moment, outside of initial post-transition phases, where they're good in those phases, like the first one or two phases after a kick, they're really, really good. If you can get them into settled phase play, like maybe 4 or 5 phases in, they're quite easy to defend. I won't say easy, but you would be a decent defense would be relatively comfortable defending what Leinster are doing at the moment. And that's not sure if it's a concern, but it's something I noticed watching the game back that without daft penalties, I felt Leinster would really struggle to advance up the field in this game, watching it back the many times that I did.
Reading some of the comments about Jack Nienaber joining Leinster, some of the things that struck me around that were some of the conversations around who had what roles last season and who had what roles this season. And I think that impacts what you were saying, Tom, because what they were talking about was Goodman had effectively set piece on both sides of the ball last year with Lancaster taking unstructured play, both attack and defence. Goodman is now looking after all attack plays. And Nienaber supposedly looking after all defensive plays. So when you consider that Goodman has, again, he was at the World Cup. So are they struggling to implement his type of attacking phased play at the moment, which could be there, and that's something that will evolve. One of the things that I noticed about it was how when Leinster went through their pod play and their phases, it was all very static. There was no fluidity to it. Munster, and I saw it a good few times from Ty Byrne. He would position himself on the outside of the furthest Leinster player in the pod. And he would actually read the ball almost before the guy at the front of the triangle had made the pass. He would read that. And he was just swimming around to the outside to stop the player out the back doing anything with it. They seem to be, number one, able to rush up and get a good line speed and then be able to make the read and shut down the play at the back very easily. And I don't think the fluidity is there. Despite it being, whatever it was, 14 players in, who had been at the World Cup for Leinster, they didn't have that cohesion that they normally do.
Bear in mind, like, most of them are playing with each other at the World Cup. Like,
and that's what I mean. Like, they didn't have that cohesion. It's like, it's not that, you know, it's something that will come. It's something that they should have already. But I think it's maybe potentially it's the tweaks in the both the defensive system and the attacking system. Because, like, you talked about their attacking system there, but, like, defensively, I thought Munster's attack asked so many questions of Henshaw and Ringrose, isolated them, put them on their heels completely. Like, one of Neen Arbour's sort of sayings from his time at Munster was, you know, you sign your name on your player, you get up there and you hit him as hard as you can, you know? And I felt that Ringrose, particularly on that 13 channel, was, they were asking so many questions, he didn't know where to go or who to hit and how to make that tackle. And Crowley, with the loop coming around, caught him 3 or 4 times in that position and sort of exposed him there, which is not something we've seen from Ringrose.
I want to ask the two of you, actually, on that. You know Neen Arbour's, like, high outside blitz with the Springboks?
Yeah.
And the personnel that they've used as of late, you know, like, they had Jesse Creel at the World Cup, but before that it was Lacanio Am. They had, what's his name, the little fella? Colby.
Colby.
And the other fella?
Arinsa, isn't it?
Arinsa. That's, their speed and their agility is a key part of that high outside edge blitz that Neen Arbour uses. Do you think he's going to use that at Leinster? And if so, does he have the personnel there, as it stands, to play that high outside edge blitz with the sort of pace and the, I suppose, the high risk, high reward that comes with it? Do you think those players are at Leinster, or will he have to either maybe make some changes or bring people in?
I think if you look at Ireland, we were already using that kind of shooter in defence, but coming from 13. Mostly, wingers would get narrow, 13 could shoot, sometimes wingers would shoot too, like, but I think that's already there to a degree, maybe not the same amount, but
be to the same level of aggression anyway, certainly from the high outside edge outside in,
even the same number of occasions, I think, wouldn't be the same, but I think there is already the makings of it there. It'll be interesting to see. And I think it'll be interesting to see where he positions wingers off kickoffs as well. Like, does he use them on the 10 like he would with South Africa on numerous occasions to make sure that they were ready to go for the box kick exit kind of a thing and to make sure they were coming up there? So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what he brings. And I think this aggression, you know, myself and Owen mentioned it last week, and it was obvious again there, we actually mentioned it already. That aggression we see in their counter ruck in the opposition's 22 and their defensive rucks, I should say. It'll be interesting to see if that's something that he, you know, kind of sent across saying, we need to start doing this. Like, Owen, you mentioned it last week as well. Last season, you wouldn't see Leinster doing that. You wouldn't see them pouring into a defensive ruck like that. But there was one ruck in the Munster game at the weekend, I can't remember when, I'd have to look for it, but there was 5 Leinster forwards poured into it, and that was a defensive ruck. 5 players entered it, and that just would not happen last year. They would just be happy to fan out and say, listen, you're going to kick to us and we're going to transition off it, or we'll take that platform or whatever you want to give us. But it'll be interesting to see.
On that, do you think that will affect the quality of Leinster's defensive transition and their offensive transition?
I think it's going to be really interesting to see when it happens against teams like Rochelle.
They're the best in Europe at offensive and defensive transition, in my opinion. But if they're going to be committing more numbers narrow to the ruck, does that make the next phase of play that bit more difficult?
Are you robbing Peter to pay Paul kind of a thing?
That's it. Like, as in, are you going to get enough out of that to make it worth throwing the numbers in, it's going to be very interesting, I think, because like they were the best in, like, certainly last season, their offensive and defensive transition was.
I think it depends where you do it as well, though, because like if you're in your own 22 and your attack and ruck is suddenly been slowed to 6, 7, 8, 9 seconds, like you're not going to play off it. You're still going to kick. And that kick is probably under a bit more pressure because your defensive line set, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So suddenly you're probably kicking to an already set back three. It depends on where the kick goes, obviously. And there's 100 different caveats, you know, you could drop the ball. But I think that your back three is already going to be set, or whoever's, let's say, set back there is already going to be set. You can probably sacrifice that bit of width in order to put pressure on that ruck and ultimately on that following kick. You're probably not going to do it in the middle of the pitch, you know. So I think the way we're saying there, would you rob Peter to pay Paul? In certain positions, you could absolutely get away with it because, like, I mean, a team who's just had a 9 second ruck isn't going to say, do you know what we'll do? We're going to whip this across the pitch now. They might, don't get me wrong, but the vast majority of the time, you'd probably be like, do you know what? We're under a bit of pressure here. Let's just boot and reset.
I think it's going to be interesting to see what they do personnel wise, because someone like James Lowe is so important to what Leinster do with their kicking game. They need his left boot. They need the length on it. He's had problems before with his defensive things. He's sorted those out, but it was sorted out within the Ireland system and the Leinster system. If that changes
as
again.
As it was, yeah.
Yeah, as it was. How he reintegrates into this team under a new system is going to be crucial to what Leinster do. He's had problems in terms of, I suppose, some of his positioning and decision-making, which he's sorted out within that sort of old system. What happens now with Leinster? I think also there's maybe the thought out there that, you know, he doesn't have that agility or quickness in turning and going back if you put in the kick behind him. So can you draw him up and put it?
Have you been looking at Sage by any chance?
No, what's
the Brian Haban ad?
Oh, no, sorry.
I looked at my analyst and he told me he was slow on the turn.
No, I haven't actually. The other one then I think is you look at the game at the weekend, and what Leinster tend to do is they tend to put Gibson Park back in the backfield to assist one of the wingers with the box kicks. And where Munster were taking box kicks that weren't sort of close to the touchlines, they actually targeted Jimmy O'Brien with them, because Gibson Park was lining up assuming that Munster were going to target Larmer, and Munster actually made quite a bit of ground and sort of got scrums, etc., out of that tactic. So I think there's the ability of how Leinster deal with those sort of box kicks, how they're going to use the personnel, and who's going to be able to work within a defensive system that Neil Arbour. Maybe he'll, as you said, maybe he'll come up with something completely different. But his style at Munster, his style with the box, his style with the Stormers before that, was all about getting your 13, getting your wingers up there. I think when I've listened and talked to people who have played under him and things like that, he never liked more than 3 or 4 passes going across a back line. You had to shut them down early. If someone had to shoot up, you had to make the decision. It's not necessarily about making the tackle. It's about stopping it getting to the edge. A missed tackle can be better than a tackle
works,
at times.
Right? If Leinster get to the stage where they're forcing guys to come back in. I mean, you look at the fucking guys they have there defensively. James Ryan, one of the best defensive players, I think, in the world. Caelan Doris, Josh Van Der Fleer, Andrew Porter, Dan Sheehan, or whoever they have in there.
I'm also going to go out on a limb and say, if you have to turn back into a tackle of Joe McCarthy coming towards you, it's really going to hurt.
Yeah, it's like and like that kind of stuff. But like, as in, it's getting the personnel. I think that's the thing, because you look at the personnel they've always or that they've brought in specifically to use when he was using that system with the Springboks as of late. Real pace, real agility. Even not they might not be the biggest men, but that ability to cut off space really, really quickly and then adjust if needs be. It's going to be interesting to see how that looks at Leinster, because just on the face of it, it would seem that if they're going to go with James Lowe, as they surely will, that he wouldn't, for me anyway, have that pace and then adjustment afterwards. So what's the story there? Like, they'd have to make it work one way or the other, but I think it's just very interesting to see how Nian Aber is going to work that, especially because Leinster are in somewhat of a coaching transition at the moment, and everything, you know, with Sexton leaving as well. I think it's a very interesting time for them, because it didn't seem like the Leinster of old on Saturday night. But at the same time, you wouldn't bet against them being in the final of both tournaments that they're in this year again either.
That's it. Then, okay, so we'll leave the Leinster game. We'll come back to that because they're playing Connacht. We'll look at Munster, who are playing Glasgow Friday night. Munster in eighth, Glasgow top of the table. So the Munster news, Ollie Yeager is in training with the squad at the moment. Peter Romani and Jack O'Donoghue, who missed the game, the Leinster game, will also miss the Glasgow game, but are not expected to be out long term, which is a big boost for Munster.
Good news.
Snyman is out till March, but I think that's as a worst case scenario. It's not necessarily that he's out. I'm going to go with blind optimism and absolutely no inside information and say he's going to come off the bench against the Crusaders in Parky Cueve.
I want to that out there. Subscribe pure to vibes. That newsletter.
Yeah, pure vibes out there. And then obviously the big news, Snyman leaving at the end of the season, but Jean Klein signed a 2-year deal along with Hodnett and Liam Coombs. We've got new contracts as well. So
tough to see Snyman going. Just because he's been such a big leader at Munster since he's been here. But you know, if it comes down to a decision between Jean Klein or RG Snyman, especially when RG is injured at the moment of a fairly long term injury, you have to go with Jean Klein.
It's durability. It's the fact he has played so much, you would hope will continue to play that. And he offers so much in terms of that sort of tight headlock role that Munster require with the issues that they have in the front row. You have to make up for that elsewhere. And I think he's done that consistently over the last number of years. So yeah, it's a no-brainer. Hopefully we get RG back and he again can make an impact in the running and the knockouts this season. But that's it. For the game on Friday night, you would hope Munster would go pretty strong as they start to prepare for Europe, load up on their players.
I think it'd be interesting to see if Glasgow do.
Yeah, I mean, they're top of the table. I think similar to what we talked about with Leinster, you look at what Glasgow do, they're a little bit like Leinster and Ulster to a degree, where they rely so much on the line-out ball. And if you can stop giving them possession and entry again into the 22 and take that sort of away from them, it does take away a big part of their scoring ability.
You look at their upcoming schedule though, and you know, a lot of it depends, I suppose, on are they going to be targeting this game? Because I think again, everybody targets games. Like, they have games that they will load up for and games they won't. They're playing Northampton in Scotstoun on the 8th of December. Now, they've gone fairly strong the last couple of weeks. Do you think they'll go as strong this week? I suppose that's going to be the main question.
Can they afford to keep playing the players without rotation?
They brought back for the World Cup so soon, actually. Yeah. That would be my question.
Yeah, because they brought them back for that Leinster game, wasn't it? The second game. Yeah.
Munster will go quite strong, I think.
I think so as well. I think you'll hopefully see Yeager. I think you'll see the likes of Klein and those still continue on playing. They'll look at that sort of block there. I'm going to go for a 7-point Munster win.
I'm going to go for a Munster win, is it?
I'm going to go with Munster bonus point win.
Sticking it out there. Right.
So I'm actually not doing too bad this year with predictions, actually.
I think Owen, I think Owen is last.
I probably am.
And genuinely, I, like, not out of badness, like, I just do think you're probably last. I'm probably first, because let's face it. But
because you keep the scores.
There's that too.
Moving on then to Connacht.
Probably worth saying, if anybody out there is keeping score, could you let us know? Because I'm certainly not.
Yeah, and bump me up by a couple of years.
Sure to make me number one.
And I'm certainly not listening back, so.
Yeah. No edits, no listen backs. That's the rules. Okay, moving on to Connacht. Got a bit of a hiding at the Bulls.
So close, weren't they?
Yeah.
I thought they struggled a bit at altitude. They struggled a bit with the
35-degree heat.
Fucking men, the Bulls have. But I think
Connacht actually, just before you go on that one, Tom. Again, Connacht had the bigger pack.
Connacht had a bigger pack, yeah.
On paper,
this is the second week. Their second game in South Africa. Twice they've had the bigger pack.
I was so close. Like, I mean, Connacht could have gone 2-for-2 in South Africa. So close.
Like,
can I take the moral victory here, like that Ulster game last year, 2 years ago?
No, he's not this, still on about that.
By the way, this is pretty much our 2 year anniversary.
And I didn't even get you anything, Jeff.
Yeah, our very first episode came out December 1st. We're one day off it, but yeah.
You keep them occupied there, Tom, and I'll run down to the petrol station.
Get off to the petrol station there.
Well, what's worse is I actually dropped it into the WhatsApp chat and neither of you gave a shit. You just totally ignored it. So,
I was half thinking of skipping tonight.
Sorry for the old romantic in me coming to the fore.
Too much Taylor Swift.
That's my issue.
That's it, I thought that Connacht, I won't say they were unlucky, but I'm not sure they played badly enough to get the hiding they did.
I think Bulls is just one of these places where teams pick up hidings, and it's to do with altitude and
the travel, everything.
The travel, yeah, the whole thing that goes with it.
And plus, as well, Bulls are a good side.
I think they're one of the best. I think they'll be one of the better and probably the best South African side this year. I think the addition of Willie LaRue into the team, he was superb, both in terms of,
as well.
Yeah, up front, and they seem to have a half decent 10 in Van der Vaart.
Thing is, with Van der Vaart, he's not the most like exciting 10, but he's perfect for what they're doing.
The Bulls only have had 2 home games so far this season. They've scored 116 points.
Yeah. Just run over people. But I think, like, in terms of Van der Vaart, you don't need someone who's that exciting. If you've got someone who can boot the leather off the ball and put it down the other end of the pitch, and then you can bring in Willie LaRue as your second playmaker.
He doesn't have to be a massively creative player, because Willie LaRue can be that. He just needs to manage their position. And he's quite good at doing that. And he's a good goal kicker too. And they've just got these just monsters.
Bulls actually only lost 2 home games last season as well, and both of them were to South African opposition. What I'm doing is, while you're chatting away, I'm actually just looking this up. So I sound like I'm dropping in tidbits, but I'm really not.
You're doing homework.
Such a tough place to go.
I'll do URC 1 now. So you keep talking about something and I'll just drop it in pretending that I...
But like, when you look at, like, when Munster played there last, was it, you think that was URC 1 actually? Mm. No. Yeah, no, it was.
URC 1, Munster lost by 5 points away.
But you could see how tough Munster, like how tough it was for Munster in that game when we hit the wall, I think, early in the second half. And it's just such a tough place to be when you can't get a full breath of air, and everything is that much harder, especially when you've got gigantic human beings trying to fucking kill you. But I didn't think Connacht were, like, they weren't great, but I didn't think that they were as bad as maybe the scoreline suggested.
The only team to beat the Bulls, actually, across the URC so far, be it 1, 2, or 3, has been South African opposition when the Bulls are at home.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough with travel and altitude and the whole lot. For me, the Bulls, as I said, look, they have a good setup there, in terms of what they're trying to do. I think they've brought in the right sort of players, things like LaRue, Goosens, guys who can add experience to what they're looking to do. For Connacht, I think they'll be happy. One win. They had a rotated team. They've used it to build experience.
No major injuries.
Well, Colm Riley, the scrum half, isn't it, is out. I think he picked up an injury in this.
Yeah, but they got away with a lot of their core starters, we'd say. Not getting fucked up.
Exactly. Now, the only thing is, I think Riley is actually
close enough there, yeah,
to their 23 enough, below, behind Blade. I think that's the only real one. They've rotated
has,
the team.
Has Riley been involved in every game so far this season? I'd say he has. This is top of my head now. This is no homer.
Yeah, he started the two games in South Africa, and I think he's probably off the bench for the others.
I think he was, yeah.
Yeah. So I think they've tried things like they tried Dowling at six. They rotated their team around. They had Hanrahan for the win previous week. They had Carty this week. I think they've done what they needed to. They've given experience to players that will potentially see that benefit further down the line. This season,
the tour is out of the way.
Yeah,
and they got a decent result. One from two in South Africa is decent.
Yeah, what have they now?
They've won their, what is it? They won out of the six. They won their three home games.
Oh, you're talking about the full thing, is it?
Yeah, like for Connacht, they won their three home games. They're probably, the one that's going to annoy them is the one against the loss against Edinburgh. You know, and then you take one win out of two and on your South Africa tour. That's a really good start to the season. If they can continue to build on that, I think by rotating here on the South African tour, it's allowed them to maybe look at what they can do over Europe and how they're going to sort of spread the players for that and the block around Christmas, which will be really good for them. I think that overall they'll be happy betting in. On top of that, I suppose, as well, you're betting in all the new coaching team across it. And that even having the tour early in the season may help with that. For this week, obviously, then it's the Saturday night. It's Connacht against Leinster in Galway, seventh against second. For Connacht, Boyle and Heffernan and Hansen are all back available. Aki is still out. Andrew Smith and Colm Riley are both out injured. For Leinster, as we talked about, Neil Arbour has arrived. Ross Byrne is now out with a bicep injury for this game and probably longer. And Healy, Milne, Foley, Tommy O'Brien and Luke McGrath are still out. So where do we think the Interpro is going this week, Tom?
I think it depends on team selections. I think Leinster will rotate a little bit from last week. And I think the game will be, I won't say closer, but I can see Leinster ultimately pulling away. But I think Connacht will land some shots in this as well. So I think Leinster will get a bonus point win, but I think at midway through the game it won't look like that. So I'm going to go with a big Leinster win.
Leinster have, I think, a lot of questions to ask because they have La Rochelle away the following week and they're going to have to figure out what they do now. Do they give more game times to the like of, say, Henshaw and Ringrose to try and get that combination working?
How long do you risk Porter, like, with the rugby he's played this year?
I think there's big questions, but they need the likes of Porter because they don't have that depth below him now with Healy still being out. I think they may go quite heavy and hope that they can build up a lead early enough to get the likes of Porter and others off. So I think they could have a fairly strong starting 15 for that. I like what Connacht have done. I think they have the additions of Hanrahan and others have gone well. I think Hawkshaw, again, continues to impress me. when he's played. I think they have the depth there. Again, it's the power up front. Can they deal with that, and can they cut out the City penalties and errors? Even going back to the Bulls game, and it's something that's gone on for the last three or four seasons since I've been watching Connacht, the restarts. They almost need to have a specialist coach come in and look at that, because they're giving away sort of, they'll go and score 3 points, and then suddenly from the kickoff, they're conceding a try. And I don't know whether it's a mental thing or whether it's an actual setup issue or what's going on, but they just have consistently brought sort of pain on themselves through that. And it's something that I think they need to look at. I'm going to go for a Leinster win, but I think it'll be narrow enough. I think 7 to 10 points.
I'm going to book this trend. I'm going to go with the Connacht win.
You realize the game is not in South Africa.
I do. But I think a lot of them aren't going to change their times from South African time. And they're going to play like they are in South Africa, thus winning the game. Logic. But I do think, I'm going to go for a Connacht win. I think it's going to be interesting to see how both teams play. I think they'll both have a really good attacking attitude, but I think Connacht are just going to kick the leather off the ball, chase hard, transition well. Their line-out defence is very good, and I think if they can manage to do a number on Leinster's line-out, not all the time, but just stop them getting quality ball, which Connacht are good at doing, I think we could see a Connacht win. So I'm going to go with that.
I think, as I said, the one area I do see Connacht causing them problems on is off strike plays and off in the wide channels. Leinster defend quite narrow. We've talked about how Munster caused them problems with using the sort of the pullback pass and loop plays and things like that. I think the Connacht wings, the likes of Kilgannon or maybe Hansen, if he's back, could cause real problems to Leinster that way.
Yeah.
And could score a try or so off that.
And I think as well, it depends on who's on the wing for Leinster. Like Larmour wouldn't be hectic under a high ball, I think it's fair to say. So it just may impact on the kicking game too, or the kick receipt game, because Connacht will kick. There's nothing sure. The only thing sure than Connacht kicking the ball is a speedy Connacht back three.
Love a speedy outside back. Okay, moving on then to Ulster. 33-20 loss away to Glasgow. Again, Glasgow, tough place to go and get a result. Things were made harder for Ulster. Flannery pulled up in the warm-up. Billy Burns was out after 20 minutes, so Doak had to go into 10. They had a very young back row there with Sheridan, Crothers and McNabby. But they still managed to get like a 14-0 lead out, and then things
slowly unraveled. Yeah. Glasgow are decent though.
Glasgow are a very good side, and very tough to beat in Glasgow. And to be fair, this is the first time Ulster have either won or lost a game by more than a score.
Yeah. And when you look at Glasgow, they're mix in the game. So like, I mean, when they get inside your red zone or your 5 meter, so good, so physical, really efficient, etc. Did a good maul. And then that try they scored a couple of tries off just playing heads up rugby, just delaying a pass, double pump, getting outside attackers, etc. Like with a little step and then giving the pass, etc. Like they were just very, very clever. The big I can't remember who scored it. I'm gonna call it the big try. But the try they scored that kind of stemmed from midfield when they whipped it across, like the space they actually ended up attacking in after the defense came up was quite narrow, and they still did very, very well there. So Glasgow, geez, they're a good team. And they've been quietly going about their business as well over the first six rounds, just getting a job done, very little trumpet blowing or anything like that, just getting wins. But I think it's probably the big, it's hard to say that it's the biggest test of Ulster just because what happened at their halfbacks, etc., throughout the game. But ultimately, you have to deal with it. I think it's the biggest test maybe Ulster have gotten so far. I'd like to say it was Munster, but, you know, they came back from being behind to win that game. But I think that Glasgow game maybe just showed, okay, are Ulster settled fully yet? I don't think they are. Again, it's hard. Again, it's just one player, don't get me wrong, but your halfback dictates play. And when suddenly you're at a guy who was pulled up into the squad who wasn't even in the initial 23, I believe, was he?
No, I don't think he was.
To play out of position as well. Like, it's a tough thing to do, you know? No, he did well. Like, Doug did well. I know he's played 10 in the past, etc., and he has done well there as well, but it's just a tough thing to do to go from not even in the 23 to playing over an hour at you know, the most pivotal role. But ultimately, you'd wonder, have Ulster, how would you say, do you think they'd care that they dropped this game? Now, I know they would have gone out and looked for a win, but the same way that, like, we talked about Munster looking at a losing bonus in Dublin there the week just gone, especially with the team they've named, etc. Like, I mean, Nick Timoney isn't in that team, etc., etc., etc. Do you think they look at that away game to Glasgow and say, well, if we can get a point there, we'll get a point there, but ultimately it's not a game we're seeking to tick off, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I think a win would have been seen maybe as a bit of a bonus on that.
Oh, yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
The one thing that I had a look back, and I did a bit of research on this, because I talked a lot about it last year when Ulster were having their problems. This year, Ulster, in their six games, they've had 4 yellow cards and they're averaging 10 penalties per game.
4 yellows already?
4 yellows already.
Is that the most? And
I don't know. I've just gone through it because I was looking at it. There was a point last year where we went through the Ulster, and you could almost say if they concede a yellow card and more than 10, they were going to lose.
Yeah, I remember that. And they were conceding fairly heavy.
Yeah, they were getting up. And if you look, there's 3 matches this season that Ulster have conceded more than 10 penalties. Zebra, they conceded 12, which they nearly lost. They only won by 4 points. They lost to Connacht when they conceded 13, and they lost to Glasgow when they conceded 12. And you're getting into that. And I know there was comments from Dan McFarland after the game where he talked about, you know, oh, they got on the wrong side of the ref and things like that. Again, I think it's one of these things. If Ulster can cut out the yellows and keep it below 10, it seems to be an indicator of whether they have a good chance of winning or not.
Kieran Treadwell has 2 yellow cards already in 6 games.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
They had 2 yellow cards against Zebra. They had 1 against the Bulls and they had 1 against Glasgow.
Yeah, I just looked up the discipline there. They're 11th. They're the 11th worst team, I suppose, for cards. They've out of their 4, and they've 60 penalties conceded. Yeah, they're 10th there as well. Jesus, they've 16 scrum offences.
A lot of those would have come early. They had big problems against Zebra on that. James French got a yellow card, I think, in that Zebra game from at the very end. He came on and had to go almost straight off.
I remember that. But I think now this weekend against Edinburgh, I think they're going to load up and it will be a different kettle of fish, to be honest.
I think they're home against Edinburgh. I think whether they load up or not, I don't know. I think they might go half and half on this one, because if you look at their run of games after that, they have Bath away, Racing at home, Connacht at home, Leinster away, Toulouse at home, and Quinns away. Which is a fairly tough run. There's not many places there that you can start to rotate guys.
Yeah.
Unless you're going to do it for one of the interpros.
That's a fair point.
So they may go sort of, I would say, some sort of a rotation on this. You'll obviously get the likes of Kitsoff, who came off the bench against Glasgow. You'd be looking to play him. I think they've done well with the youngsters that they have in there. Like, as you said, McCann is top of the thing. You've had the likes of Crothers, Postlethwaite has played well, Harry Sheridan, these sort of guys who come through. The one thing that I do see with Ulster is you need to see the backs click more. And like, the way I look at it is, you have so many exciting and particularly young players that are coming, that have either come through or coming through, and such quality players there. Like, you look at it, you have Doak, you have Hume, you have Lowry, you have Balakoon, even Stockdale, who's come back from injury. All those players. You look at all that talent there, but you look at the guy who's actually playing for Ireland at the moment out of the Ulster backline, and it's McCluskey.
Yeah.
One guy, and it's McCluskey who fits a very specific role. Now, whether that says more about Ireland or whether that says more about how the Ulster backs are being used is a different thing.
Yeah.
You hear people talking about Balakoon needs to get more involved in a game. Like, I heard, I think it was genuinely one of the most stupid things I've heard from a pundit in a long while, who said Balakoon needs to get more involved in the game. He needs to come in off his wing and look for the ball more himself.
It's not junior rugby we're playing here.
No. He's playing to a scheme. He's playing to tactics. You know, yeah. If his role, and if you look at what Ulster do, Ulster have two things that define how they play and how they score. You have the line-out maul, and you have a crossfield kick to a winger. And that's pretty much it.
And they like to play off nine. I don't know who gave out to you last week or 2 weeks ago. I don't know who hurt you, but you were right. They play off nine.
And them playing off nine is fine, but they've got to find, and I think they're starting to do it. You're not going to do that with guys who can't make it in their own provinces. You have to find guys who are coming up and who are the best in their positions. And the best chance you have of that is getting players through your own systems. And I think they're starting to do that. You look at the likes of Sheridan, Crothers, McNabby, McCann, those guys. They need those guys to develop and come through for them. And then you can add to them with the likes of Ewers and Kitsoff and things like that, and you can play it. But it's going to be relying on those guys to give Ulster the foundation that they need, I think, to play that way.
So who are you going for this weekend, Ulster or Edinburgh?
I'm going to go with Ulster. I think at home, I think they'll sneak a narrow win, but yeah, maybe 5 points plus.
I'm going for Ulster as well, I think. I just, like, it's at home. I think they'll be big enough and bad enough to get a win. Yeah, I'm going Ulster anyway. And I think Tom said Edinburgh.
Tom said even Trailfinders again. The other thing from the Ulster game, Cooney went past 1,000 points for Ulster.
Yeah, that's class.
In Glasgow. That is.
First since Humphreys, is it? Or is there only two?
I think there is only two.
Yeah, it's just him and Humphreys, yeah.
Him and Humphreys, yeah. I'm not sure. I don't think Pienaar got up.
Oh, and Stephen Archer became the most capped Munster player.
New player.
About that too, yeah.
Yeah, he did.
We are not giving any kudos to any players. We forgot about Herring. We forgot, myself and Tom, didn't know about Herring a couple of weeks ago either. So yeah, we must start doing some homework. Start getting a script together.
Yeah, not just looking at our phones as we're talking through this podcast, looking for information. Right, we'll round it up there, folks. Thank you very much for listening to our ramblings and for supporting the podcast. Please do rate and review the podcast on whatever platform you listen, as it really helps. And also be sure to share the podcast on social media. Hope you have a good week, and the three of us will be back next week to chat again.